This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and man, today's guest, his name's Shane O'Connor. First off, by the way, Shane, you have the most Irish name ever, Shane O'Connor.
I do well in Ireland. I blend right in.
Have you ever been to Ireland?
Yeah, I've been there four times, actually.
Oh, okay. All right, nice. Nice. So no one questioned you?
Nope. I just put on a fake accent. I belong.
you don't get carded anywhere. Well, they probably don't card
in
Ireland anyway. So
I don't give a fuck.
I love it. Okay. I just want to kind of mentioned something in my life that's happened real quick, and that is today is my daughter's 13th birthday. So I have a teenager.
That's a big one.
As a child. And I didn't ever think, you ask me 15 years ago, hey, dude, are you ever going to get married and have any kids? I would have just laughed at you. But here I am, you know, 20 years later, or 13 years later, I got married. I have three kids, and my life is very unique. I won't say that it's excellent, or I won't say it's like horrible, but it's different, and I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat you were, I think, 13 years ago. I'm never getting married. Never having kids. I feel like such a child. All my friends are out because I'm 27. So I'm like at that age where all my friends are starting to get settled and have kids. And I was talking to one the other day. He's having his third kid. I'm like, dude, like, do you feel like an adult? Because I definitely don't.
Well, dude, I'll tell you this. I got some buddies who they're the same age as me. Okay. I'm 45 and they're still unmarried and they're still no kids. And I look at their life and I go, okay, I love my kids. I would never trade any of that for the world. So maybe that's kind of something I wouldn't trade. But they're always like, you know, they're always at the playoff football game, or they're always at the bowl game, or they're always out doing something fun and crazy. They have no responsibilities other than, you know, whatever girlfriend they have at the time and taking them to all of these crazy places. And I'm just like, that would be kind of cool, but I don't know, dude, I'm past that stage of my life, and I just, I'm happy to be where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, having kids is a whole nother ball game. So, I couldn't imagine.
That's a fact.
I hope to have kids, but I couldn't imagine being a dad. It seems like it kind of occupies everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you're finding time to hunt.
Yeah. Well, it's less and less every year. I'll tell you that much right now. All right. So real quick, I was on the couch, probably ignoring my kids or my wife or something like that. And I was into a good old fashioned doom scroll. And I noticed this dude making a comment. I'm guessing it was on Instagram. And he's like, well, I'm going to give this bow hunting thing a try. I bought a bow and I want to learn how to bow hunt. Okay. And so that's where this story starts. So I reached out to you, blah, blah, blah. We bounced back and forth a couple ideas, and now we're here. And we're going to talk about your bow hunting journey at some point today. But before we get into that, I have to do a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And if you guys are looking for, in my opinion, one of the best broadheads on the market, go check out Wasp Archery. They have mechanical and fixed blade options that are still manufactured in the United States. So go check out wasparchery.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list, it's almost turkey season. And Vortex Optics offers a variety of red dots for your turkey shotgun. They offer the binos, the rangefinders, the spotting scopes, the rifle scopes, and everything in between. Go check out vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense. They have real and synthetic deer lures. They have scent elimination products. My favorite, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. Go check out codebluesense.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And by the way, right now, Reveal Trail Cameras is offering a pretty badass deal. They're offering a really badass deal where you can take your old trail cameras. I don't even think they have to be in working condition. You can send them to them and they're going to give you a $50 credit towards a brand new camera. That blows my mind that they're doing this and they're able to do that. And so if you're looking to upgrade your cell cams or get into the cell cam game, go check out Reveal's cameras, as well as all of the options that they have in this new camera trade-in promotion that they're running. So tacticam.com/cameras, go check it out. Lastly, my company, Full Sneak Gear, go check out fullsneakgear.com and buy a t-shirt. That's it. All right. Shane, where do you live and what do you do for a living?
All right. I live in Texas right now. So I'm in Fredericksburg, Texas, which is it's about an hour and a half west of Austin. Texas Hill Country. It's beautiful. And I currently work for a company out of Austin. We build essentially it's like tactical communication systems for the Marine Corps and the Navy. The military in general, but I work specifically with the Marine Corps and the Navy.
Oh, awesome. Did you serve? How'd you get that job?
I was in the Marine Corps from 2020 to 2025.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. So is this a government company or how's that work? What's the, yeah, so how do you make? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird little niche for sure. I mean, I guess I say little, it's kind of the biggest industry in the world, military industrial complex. But it's a private company. We produce the products and then we usually through government contracts, but sometimes through, you know, little niche, not contracts. We sell to the military. I sell specifically to the Marine Corps and the Navy because I was in the Marine Corps. And that's how it goes. It's a pretty cool job. I just travel, you know, most of the time, probably 50-60% of the time. I'm actually leaving tonight. I just travel to Marine Corps and Navy bases and meet with cool people and hopefully get them the best capabilities we can get them. It's a pretty cool job.
So are you just showcasing your products at that point when you travel? And then does like the purchase order come in through a different part of the government or does each military base decide on what they want?
Yeah, it's just going to decide. It's going to depend, you know, as everything does. Sometimes the contracts are like a big government contract. It's going to come from, you know, big Marine Corps, like the big Navy out of like DC and stuff. But, you know, the smaller units at each military base, you know, like for example, Camp Pendleton is the big Marine Corps base and out in California, and each unit at that base will have, you know, a certain allocation of funds that their commander can spend as he wishes. So it just depends on who's buying and how big the order is.
Yeah. What kind of products do you sell?
This is where it gets a little complicated. So tactical communications equipment, essentially. So it's really, you can just think of it as a radio or a computer that's encrypted, very, very well encrypted, to send any sort of data that has to do with military operations. It can be targeting data. It can be the fuel status of an aircraft. It can be, I mean, you name it. It can be sent like that in a secure manner. And so you think of it as a radio. It's actually a software. So we're moving away from like actual radios. Everything's starting to become software now.
Okay. So it's not necessarily the computer or the walkie-talkie. It's what is inside of that, the software of those devices. Yes.
Pretty much. All right. Yep. So you can put it on, I mean, as long as your computer has the hardware to support it, you can put it on whatever.
Okay. So how do you do that on an individual? Like, is there tech? Because I'm assuming out there there's military gear that we don't even know about. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like almost like the movie Predator, where they have laser cannons on their arm, on their shoulders, and like a mask can come down or see through some sunglasses, and it has all this computer information pop up. Is that kind of the, are you into the future type stuff?
Well, Dan, in that situation, I would say I can't answer that question. I'm just fucking with you. No, it is, there's some, definitely some crazy stuff out there. That's for sure. The systems that I use specifically, the systems themselves are not classified systems. This is, kind of something I don't think a lot of people, I mean, most people obviously don't understand how, you know, classification works, but the systems that I sell and the systems that, that, you know, these customers are using generally are not classified systems. The aspect of this stuff that is classified is the data that's being passed in the system. I don't know if that makes any sense, but so like the computer itself is not classified, but the computer, the data that the computer is processing is classified. So
I gotcha.
It's not as cool as, as, you know, stealth fighter jets and stuff, but it's kind of what makes everything run in the background that lets the stealth fighter jets do their job.
Have you ever, like, have you ever used a pickup line on a girl, like, and you're like, oh, hey, we don't sell stealth fighters, but the stealth fighter wouldn't be able to do what it does without me? Have you ever
it sounds really nerdy because it's like I'm not like a computer guy, but at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, like you want to buy some software? But yeah, it's a cool job.
That's cool, man. So you probably get a, you know, that throughout your travels, you got to meet some pretty interesting people. Do you ever have to go overseas?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I love traveling. I meet tons of cool people. That's like one of my favorite things. Generally, I've been, I mean, the Marine Corps, obviously I've been blessed to travel a lot in the Marine Corps and now outside of the Marine Corps. I think I've been to, I think 32 countries now, everywhere in the US pretty much. Just Hawaii.
Anywhere there's a military base, correct?
Anywhere there's a military base for the most part. I've been to pretty much all of Europe. Pretty much all of Europe. I've been to everywhere in Europe, a little bit of South America, some of Central America.
Dude, so, man, that sounds like fun. That sounds like a fun job and a cool job for a younger guy.
It is. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing this with kids and stuff. I'm never home, but, for what I'm doing now, you know, not having responsibilities and, I couldn't ask for a better job. So the only thing is, you know, it gets in the way of my shooting the bow because I'm only shooting when I'm home. So.
And I was just going to say, like, you know how I know you're never home? Because you don't have shit on your walls. Like, I look at behind you, you don't have anything on your walls. So that tells me you're never at that place.
it's a bachelor pad living room.
For sure. Okay. All right. Okay. So being from, did you grow up in Texas?
No, I actually grew up in Massachusetts. So big shift. I grew up in Massachusetts. I went to school in Virginia. And then I moved, I joined the Marine Corps in 2020 and I lived in Virginia for a year. And then I lived in, I was stationed in, like near Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. So I lived there until about 2025 and then I moved here.
Okay, cool. So kind of a big shift from the Northeast to Texas.
Oh yeah.
Even from a culture standpoint, did you hunt or fish when you were growing up as a kid?
No hunting. Yeah. So. Never done any hunting really until I went to North Carolina. I did a little bit of duck hunting with some of my buddies in North Carolina. But I'm coming from tons of fishing and huge spear fishermen. Yeah. So that's kind of why I jumped to bow hunting. Cause, you know, bow hunting kind of seems like the partner to spear fishing. It's essentially the same thing. Okay. You gotta get real close. It's like the same sort of killing method.
Yeah.
The only difference is you can breathe when you're bow hunting.
There you go. talk to me a little bit about spear fishing. That seems like, number one, obviously I don't know if I can spear fish in Iowa. If I allowed to spear fish in Iowa, I couldn't see shit, you know, five feet in front of my face. When did you pick up spear fishing?
So I was lucky to grow up right by the ocean, in Massachusetts. So fantastic fishing, just, you know, world-class fishing, striped bass fishing, tuna fishing.
Yep.
So world-class fishing generally. Sometimes the visibility was not as good as other days, but, you know, sometimes it's pristine. It just depends on the water conditions. But I got into spearfishing because my older brother was a Navy diver. And so I would go and visit him. He was stationed in Panama City, Florida, and Destin, Florida, and stuff like that. So I would go visit him when I was in college, like when I was in high school and college. And he was getting into it down there. And I was like, this is so cool. He took me one time. And after that, I was kind of hooked and went home, you know, bought a spear and then just started going right off the beach back home. And, you know, luckily I ended up being stationed in right on the coast of North Carolina, and absolutely beautiful area. So right near, like right south of the Outer Banks, incredible fishing there, you know. So that's how I got into it. And you could probably do it in Iowa if you find a lake with clear enough water.
Clear water, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody has ever spearfished for a flathead catfish.
Oh, for sure. I think. I guess, I don't know. You're supposed to like stick your hand in the hole or something. You're supposed to do noodling.
Yeah, that's like what they do. Yeah, noodling. That's what we do. So, but the first time you ever went spearfishing was down in Florida or right with your brother, but then you had to come up back home and spearfish. And I've been to the Atlantic Ocean up in Maine and the water temperature is a little different from those two places.
Man, Maine is a whole different animal. It's way colder. It doesn't seem very far away, but it's way colder in Maine. Luckily, you know, Massachusetts kind of sticks out a little bit off the coast. Right. So there's a kind of a current of warm water that comes up from the Bahamas and comes up past Florida and then it shoots up away from New Jersey sort of. But it kind of hits the edge of Massachusetts like that. So luckily the water gets up into the 70s actually.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, by August it'll be like 72.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. So you're not spearfishing in November?
No, I'm not back in Massachusetts. You kind of get 3 months. You get June, July, August, maybe a little bit of September, but nothing. It's too cold.
I'm interested in that. Talk to me a little bit about what all is all necessary or even how you spearfish.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, it's the best thing ever. That's just my opinion. I love spearfishing. So obviously, you know, you need your fins, mask, goggles, spear. You should have a knife. That's kind of it. If at a really base level, that's kind of it. If the water's warm enough, you just can go right in your board shorts. But if you want to do it right, you know, you need your mask, your goggles, snorkel, wetsuit, weight belt, a knife or two, you know, spear gun, stringer. You're going to have a line going from your spear gun to a float. That's going to be floating at the surface. It depends, man. It really depends on it. It's like hunting. It depends on what size fish you're targeting. You know, it's going to be a different setup if you're shooting, you know, if you're shooting little fish along the reef with a hand spear versus shooting, you know, 300-pound tuna out in blue water ocean. It's going to be a bit of a different game. So, but yeah, the concept is actually really, really similar to hunting. You know, you have to know when the fish are active. You know, the time of day is going to affect that. The tides are going to affect that. The water visibility is going to affect that. The pressure from predators, sharks, you know, predatory fish, that's going to affect depending on the species of fish that you're targeting. You know, you're going to identify, you know, the type of fish that you want to go for. You got to know, you know, am I going when the tide is going in or is the tide going out? You know, that's going to affect not only the fish's movement, but it's going to affect your movement, right? Like it's probably not smart to go spearfishing on an outgoing tide somewhere where there's a really strong current. You know, you're going to end up gone forever. You identify your fish, you know, you hold your breath, dive to the bottom, try not to spook them, you know, minimize your movement. You're going to essentially be crawling along the bottom. And then, you know, you got to keep yourself from being, I guess, ridgelined essentially. You don't want to be sticking up too much so the fish can see you. The fish usually have pretty good vision. You just want to chill out and sort of settle into a good hiding spot and let the fish come to you. And then you got to get pretty close.
Yeah, right. All that sounds good. But the only thing that I I didn't hear scuba tank in this whole thing.
Yeah. Like, well, so scuba tank, we see scuba tank. I free dive. Free diving is, you hold your breath. We see scuba tank. Spearfishing is cheating. It's kind of lame. Yeah, you're holding your breath.
So you're judging people just like we in the bow hunting community judge crossbow hunters.
Exactly. Don't be that guy.
All right. Okay. Exactly. So free diving. Okay.
Yep.
That shit's crazy because I've seen YouTube videos of it. And you mentioned all these things that have to be done. You're walking, you know, you're descending, you're looking for the fish, you're coming up. I would make it to about 30 seconds. No, I bet I can't even hold my breath for 30 seconds. and so my question is, how do you train yourself to be able to be there long enough to actually get a shot off at a fish?
Yeah, so I'm really comfortable in the water just because I've been swimming my whole life. I would say you generally want to be a pretty comfortable swimmer, and comfortable, you know, obviously holding your breath and going underwater.
Yeah.
If you're not, you really, you know, you shouldn't just be like swimming around in the ocean anyway. If you're not a comfortable swimmer, the ocean is like, has no mercy and you will die. It's just like, you know, going out into the backcountry without being prepared. You're going to get effed up real quick. So it's really just put like, you know, you kind of just got to commit to it. Like, I'm going to dive down to this depth and then I'll come back up. As long as you're comfortable, I would say, you know, as long as you're comfortable swimming and holding your breath, a couple sessions, a couple hours, I could probably get you diving down to like 40 feet, maybe more, holding your breath for at least a minute and a half. A lot of it's just technique. It's technique and understanding how to relax, understanding how to like take that breath, slow your heart rate down. Minimize your movements. You know, any movement is going to use oxygen. Any oxygen used is going to limit your time underwater. So the key is to, you know, really take your time at the surface before you dive. You want to dive with plenty of rest, plenty of time between your dives, and make sure your heart rate is nice and low. So if you come back, obviously, you know, you're kicking back up from the bottom. If you're diving pretty deep, you're going to kick back up. Get to the top, your heart rate's going to be a little bit elevated. You're going to have to take the time. And that's why I like to have a watch. That's my heart rate. You know, take the time, watch your heart rate come down. And I have like a target heart rate that I don't like to dive unless my heart has come down under. Usually it's around like 55 beats per minute. If it's not under that, I'm going to just chill at the surface and take my breath, and then I'll dive.
Summer is officially here. And you know what that means? Long late nights by the grill, weekends at the lake, and hitting the golf course with your buddies. And nothing elevates those perfect summer moments quite like a premium cigar. Whether you're pairing a rich Murado with a cold bourbon after a backyard barbecue or enjoying a smooth smoke on the porch at sunset, Thompson Cigar has you covered. They've been America's humidor since 1915, offering the absolute best selection and prices. Because they have one of the largest humidors in the country, your cigars are guaranteed fresh and delivered straight to your door. If you want to try something new, check out their unique 5-pack fever deals or their value clubs for unbeatable savings and expert curation. Use my code NFC at checkout for up to 20% off your orders of $75 or more. Or visit thompsoncigar.com/NFC and the discount will be automatically applied. Some exclusions may apply. Gotcha. All right. Dude, that sounds cool. When you're going out, what type of fish are the most sought after?
Oh, man. I mean, that's a tough question to answer. Tuna is delicious, you know. Yeah. I can't handle tuna in the can. I'm kind of a snob, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, I'm sure it's like going to the grocery store for you and looking at the meat case. It's like, you're like, I just don't really, you know, it just doesn't do it for you.
Yeah.
You know, wahoo, mahi-mahi, all the good ones that you see, you know, on the menus at restaurants. It's pretty much those are the good ones. Tuna is as good as it gets, I would say. You know, you get some good sushi grade tuna. It's just the most beautiful red, you know, ruby red color. You get the tuna belly. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. So out of curiosity, for a spear fisherman, do you still have to follow all the bag limits and rules and regulations as a normal fisherman would?
Yeah, so it depends. It depends on the state. Again, just like hunting, some states are going to have weird rules. It's the same, you know, there's daily bag limits. There's different, you know, different mm-hmm. fish that you can't shoot. You can only shoot one fish, you know, one of these species per day, you know, three per boat. It really just depends on the fish species. I would say there's a problem, in my opinion, in this aspect of the spearfishing community that I don't know if is the same in hunting. I think that the regulations are really falling, you know, they're falling behind. I don't think people really keep up with updating the regulations. Mm-hmm. I feel like spearfishing is such a niche sport, even compared to hunting, that people kind of forget about it. And I think in terms of like a conservation aspect, I do think that they're really falling behind. For example, in Massachusetts, there's really strict regulations surrounding striped bass. So like, you can only keep striped bass that are between, I think it's like 32 and like 38 inches. So it's like, that's a really narrow window of striped bass to keep. And they're going off of regulations from like the 80s when the striped bass population was like down to like critically endangered. It was like 2 million species or like 2 million individuals. But now like it's 40 years later, we're going off the same regulations. You know, these regulations haven't been changed. Now there's like 60 million individuals in the population. So it's like, this doesn't really make sense. I'm watching tons of striped bass swim right in front of me. I have my spear and I'm like, that's probably a 30 inch striped bass right there, but it looks a little bit on the small side. So I'm not going to shoot it. So,
yeah. So they have a slot, for white bass. And the thing about that is like, once you poke a fish with a spear, you can't
no
throw
it
back. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly. So you guys have to be ultra critical, I'm guessing, in when the trigger pulls that you have for that.
Yep. It's I think it's really like the best, most ethical way to fish. It really is. Because you know, fishing, there's so much that can go wrong that could make the fish, you know, that could leave the fish not able to survive. You could swallow the hook, you know, you could fuck up taking it out of its lip. There's, you know, so many things that could happen. It's not to mention, you know, the fish is on the line half the time. Your shark is going to come up and bite the back half of the fish off. So,
yeah,
you know, there's so much that can happen. And in fishing with a rod and reel, that's not going to happen in spear fishing. And, you know, ideally you are shooting the fish in a method that it dies instantaneously. You know, that's like the perfect shot. It just stones the fish instantly. So it's more ethical. It's more humane.
Yeah. So there's a conservation effort, and that's a, you know, yes, in hunting that happens a lot too, where the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, they're always doing something that's pissing somebody else off, right? We need to change the rules and regulations, or we need to do this, and this, but there's nobody ever giving like any type of real insight to them to help them figure out how to do their jobs. And, you know, usually fisheries, habitat specialist and anybody in any Department of Natural Resource is underfunded big time, you know, and so they don't even have the ability to probably do the research that they need to do in order to make a more accurate rule and or regulation. So,
right.
Is there like a spear fisherman of North America conservation club or
not that I know of. I've never.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't even looked into it though. Maybe I'm sure. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, conservation group. I'd have to look into it. It's a good idea.
Yeah. Cause they have, you know, like we have the National Wild Turkey Federation, or we have the National Deer Alliance or the Mule Deer Foundation or things like that help preserve the wildlife that we're going after. And I was just curious if you guys had something similar to that. Cool, man. One last spearfishing question. Have you ever had an oh shit moment where you're underwater, you're looking for fish, and then all of a sudden there's a great white shark in front of you?
I mean, I've never had a personal encounter with a great white shark. I mean, I've had a couple oh shit moments. Sharks, I personally don't think sharks are that scary. I think once you spend enough, time in the, you know, in the ocean, doing this particular activity, you realize that the sharks are really not the scary ones. For me, I mean, I know rationally that they're not going to do anything to me, but barracuda really freaked me out because they're always, especially in places where spearfishing is common. One, they can get really freaking big. You know, they can get like 4 feet long, which for a barracuda is pretty large. They have really scary looking teeth, and like their jaw kind of hangs open, and they've got these giant like wolf looking teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And they swim in big packs, and they just know, like they know you're there to spearfish, and they just, as soon as they see you, like they're waiting for you. It's the creepiest shit ever. And they like to be where you're like, if you're looking at them, they'll swim away from you. But then you realize they're behind you. You know what I mean? Like they know when you make eye contact, that's when they break off. But so you go somewhere where there's a lot of, you know, a lot of fishing going on and a lot of spearfishing, and there's barracuda, man, you dive in the water, you're going to have, they're going to be off in the distance waiting, just watching you the whole time.
Like a barracuda is not going to eat a human, right?
No, but they're not going to eat you, but they're going to go after the fish you shoot. They can definitely take off your finger. I know of a friend. I know of a friend from back home who had their foot got bit by a barracuda, and it like sliced a bunch of the ligaments and stuff in like three of their toes, and that wasn't even a big barracuda. So
damn,
they
dude.
Can really mess you up. And sharks are like. I don't know. I feel like sharks are more predictable, in my opinion. As long as you keep don't be stupid. It's probably the same thing with bears in the backcountry. As long as you're not stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. What else has there ever been? Not like a predator, oh shit moment, but like current,
luckily,
or something like that.
Yeah. Luckily, nothing crazy. Like nothing where I was like. I was like in fear of my life. I mean, I've had like weird stuff where like your fin gets like caught in like a coral hole or something like that. And then you like have a moment of panic where you're like, oh shit, like I'm stuck.
Right.
And being stuck at like 60 feet underwater is like kind of scary, but you know, then you kind of reel it back in. You're like, all right, like I can get out of here as long as if I'm just yanking on it, I'm not going to get out of here. But if I just put my foot in, twist it, pull it out, then it'll, I'll pop out. So I've had a couple moments like that for sure. I mean, other stuff is just like shooting a decently large fish and not killing it. And then it, swim back towards you and it's got a spear sticking out of it. So like, just like weird shit like that, you got to be careful of. But I've had shark encounters with bull sharks and stuff like that, which are scary because bull sharks are vicious. But I haven't had like scary moments.
Have you ever ran into a scenario where you're underwater and maybe like another boat pulls up on top of you and then like all of a sudden they're dumping human bodies into the ocean and it's like a Miami Vice type theme where they're like there's a shootout and then they're dumping drugs and evidence in there?
No, thankfully.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Nothing like that. That'd be pretty crazy. I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Just you're pretty try to hold your breath a little. Water, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That is scary, actually. I've had like situations where you're underwater and you can hear, you can hear a boat because, the water transmits sound really well. So even if the boat's like a mile away, it sounds like it's right over you and you're like, I'm running out of air. Like I got to go up, but like, you don't know where the boat is coming, you know? So that's like a little freaky, but you kind of just like, well, I got to go up.
Dude, that's nuts, man. Yeah. And I'm guessing in certain ocean conditions, they can't even see you. Waves, they'd never be able to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Any sort of like texture on the water will make it really hard. The other thing is like the angle of the sun. I mean, water can be like a mirror and stuff. So if the sun's hitting just right, like it's just glare, you can't see anything. So.
Yeah, man, I'm going to stick to bow hunting above ground. And so, when you said, getting your foot caught in a piece of coral 60 feet underwater, I instantly thought of dying. I don't know why. I didn't even think of trying to keep calm. I just like, I would be saying my prayers and being Lord, take me.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's good though. It's a good adrenaline rush.
I love it. All right, cool. By the way, I think you might be the first person ever on my 1,000+ episodes where I've ever had a discussion about spearfishing. So
let's go. That's awesome. I hope more people get into it. It's like the natural counterpart to bow hunting. It's the same. Yeah. It's honestly the same. You just can't breathe.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't make it the same though. but I'll tell you this. I wish there was there's probably a good place. Do you think there's a good place where there's really good deer hunting and you can have really good spear fishing?
Oh yeah, 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 for sure. Hawaii is like comes to mind right away. I love watching Meat Eater. Steve Rinella's a dog. He's done a couple of episodes actually there. He did one. Yeah. I think he was goat hunting and spear fishing. I mean, you could do them in the same day. Hawaii, yeah. I mean, you could do them in North Carolina, where I was stationed. I mean, you can do it anywhere pretty much. It just depends on how willing you are to get in cold water that's murky.
Yeah, I feel you. All right. Well, back to the bow hunting thing. And you were kind of making this decision. Hey, man, like this is the conversation I got from you. It's like, I'm going to give bow hunting a try. Right. And so what led up to you having, you know, you're a guy from the coast who was a spear fisherman, you moved down to Texas, and now all of a sudden you want to try to give bow hunting a try. How'd that happen?
Well, you can't spearfish here, as far as I'm aware, near Austin, Texas. So right off the rip, I was like, well, I got to figure out, you know, how to get my fix somehow. And then, you know, I've always had bow hunting specifically in the back of my mind. I just the concept of, you know, getting your own meat, like, that's just been something on the front of my mind for a long time, and more so given all the craziness going on in the world right now. Being able to be more self-reliant, and I feel very comfortable in that regard when I'm by the ocean. Mm-hmm. So I know I can just go fishing. But being here, I don't have that option. And so, you know, I was like, well, I got to start hunting. And then knowing that the barrier to entry is likely as high for hunting as it is for spearfishing, you know, like I would never have gotten into spearfishing if someone hadn't taken me spearfishing. I don't even know how you could possibly get into spearfishing if you aren't a good swimmer and have somebody who will be like, let's go spearfishing. It just seems crazy to me.
Right.
I think hunting is like very similar. I think the barrier to entry is so high. It's such an intimidating thing to, you know, if you don't have anyone in your family that's hunted, you don't have anyone that's willing to take you hunting, you know, what do you do? You don't know what you don't know. You don't know where to go. You know, you don't know what to use. You don't know how to find animals. It's just such a high barrier to entry. And so I figured the best way to do it is to do it the way I have done everything in my life and just fucking do it. So I went to a bow shop and I walked in. I was like, hey, like I've never shot a bow in my life. I'd like to start bow hunting. Can you please sell me a bow? That's not $5,000. And they're like, sure.
Yeah.
That's how it started.
Oh, well, that seems pretty simple.
I know. It did seem real simple.
Yeah. So your first like thought was, I want to try, like, was meat, like the decision to do this was meat focused. Like I want to procure my own meat.
I would say it's three parts. It's like threefold. Okay. Self-reliance is like a huge one. I'm trying to be as self-reliant as I can. That's kind of the message that I am pushing through my own business. You know, my business, I'm trying to build strong men, and part of building strong men is self-reliance, right? And so you have to practice what you preach. So getting your own meat is huge. I think that's kind of a center point to being self-reliant, is not having to rely on somebody else for food. And in this case, it's the government. So huge piece. And then it's an adrenaline fix. I can't go spearfishing here. I need something else that's kind of going to scratch that itch. I think it seems like, you know, bow hunting for a bull elk seems like about as good as it can get in terms of getting your adrenaline fix.
Yeah.
And then it's just something I've been interested in terms of the physical fitness aspect. So I would say that's like the third piece. It just seems so darn hard. And I really like doing hard things. Like I like doing things that, you know, I do most of these things by myself because most people aren't into these things, you know?
Yeah.
So it just seems like the kind of the ultimate, you know, the culmination of those three things that are important to me. And, you know, I just figured the way to do it is to just walk into the shop and, you know, be honest. I've never bow hunted, but, you know, you got to take the first step. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a show or because most people don't all of a sudden say, I want to do something if they have no clue about, like, nothing about it. Did you have a group of people that you hung out with or that you knew who were already doing it? Like you mentioned Ranella. Were you watching some Meat Eater episodes or anything like that? Where did the spark come from?
Yeah. So I think, I really think the big moment was when I moved to, I'll backtrack. So where I grew up was like huge whitetail hunting, you know, insane whitetail population. And, you know, the hunters swarmed every year. And so kind of just watching that, I've killed multiple deer in my life just from hitting them with my car. I've never actually intentionally killed them, but so like the deer population's out of control there. And so, you know, that was always in the back of my mind. And then going in and starting to spearfish, that kind of, you know, sparked like the hunting aspect of things. And then when I moved to North Carolina in 2021, I lived right on the edge of the, like, one of North Carolina's biggest game preserves. It's called the Croatan Game Lands, and it's in coastal North Carolina. And I lived literally on the edge of it. Like the access road was right along my grass. So every hunting season I would see all the hunters going and then coming out with big bucks in the back of their trucks. And then that kind of piqued my interest, but I was always deployed. So I was never there like to be able to start doing it. And then I moved here and I was like, I just got to do it. So that's just how it went.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, cool. All right. I'll
add to that, you know, seeing all those hunters coming in and coming out with the big deer, that kind of piqued my interest. And then I did start watching all of Brunella's stuff on Netflix. And then I was like, all right, I got to get into the bow.
Gotcha.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
No, you're good. So as you went into the store, I mean, dude, you would have been perfect. You would have been the perfect guy to be like, you need this and you need this and you need this. And then they said, we don't want to go over $5,000, but they're going to definitely take you to $499.99. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, walk me through the bow selection process and did you have a good bow shop to go to where they walked you through, they did all the measurements and tried to do the thing that made you the most comfortable with whatever bow you selected?
I only have experience with one bow shop. So to me, they seemed really great. So shout out to Los Cazadores. They're great. They're here outside of Fredericksburg. Mm-hmm. I walked in, I was like, look, I've never shot a bow in my life. I'm trying to get into bow hunting. You know, here's my budget. I don't want to spend any more than this. Like, but I also don't want to buy, you know, something cheap. Like I want to get something quality that's going to last me and is going to be actually usable and something I can, you know, hunt with for the next few years at least. And they're like, all right, like, let's go try some bows. And so they put out a couple different, like three different bows that were within my price range. And they talked about the differences of each. I think one, the can, what are they called? The rollers at the top and bottom of the bow. I don't even know what those are called.
The cams.
Yeah. Yeah. They had three different bows. One of them had had one circular cam. One of them had two. Oh, there we go. Some hearts are popping up on my screen. Two circular cams. And then the third one had no circular cams. So there was a kind of oblong sort of oval.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying stuff that makes no sense.
I'm feeling I got it.
Okay, now, cool. So
the question is just, do you happen to remember what three brands of bow you tried out?
I want to say two of them were bear. I don't remember what the third one was. And so they were like, yeah, like we're going to just practice or try pulling these back and see which one feels the most comfortable. And they explained how, you know, the one without the one with both circular cams is going to be, you know, much more difficult to hold all the way back. You know, the one with the two ovals is going to feel more difficult at first, but it's going to settle, but much easier. Like, so they went through it all with me, and I ended up going with both of the bear gamekeeper. It just felt so, it just felt smooth. Like I'm a pretty strong guy. And so it felt smooth to just kind of yank past like that initial resistance and then settle into a nice, easy hold. So they were great. They let me try all three of them. And then they measured my draw length.
How long ago was that?
This was probably this is either the last week of December or the first week of January.
Oh, so that was this year. That was a couple months ago.
This was like 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep. All right, dude. So you're taking your first steps now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thankfully, thankfully, cool. Like 1,000 people have reached out to me because of that video I posted and have given me so many tips that I don't even know what to do with them all. But thank you. Like, I appreciate them all so much.
Yeah, be careful for. Yeah. Be careful for internet tips, dude. That's what I'll say when it comes to bow hunting.
It all condensed down into a couple of things. It condensed down into like a couple of really good people to follow on Instagram. So like Knock on TV and Elk Shapes, like I started following them and they've kind of been guiding me without even knowing it. But shout out to those guys. They've been guiding my form. And then like a bunch of people offering to take me hunting, which is really cool. And then a bunch of people offering to, you know, come, this is my guiding service, that sort of thing, which maybe I'll do down the road, but I don't think I'm quite ready to spend $6,000 on a hunt when I don't even know how to shoot too well. But it's been, I mean, people have been, the community as a whole has been so, so welcoming. I can't even, you know, can't even give you guys props enough, but man, they were great. As far as I'm aware, they measured my draw. You know, they let me try out the different types of release, the thumb release and the trigger release and stuff like that. And so they're like, just, you know, pick which one feels more natural to you. I just went with the trigger release cause it felt like shooting a rifle. You know, they then like walked me through the different types of arrows and, you know, spines and stiffness and everything. And they put me in some arrows and then they cut the arrows, you know, did everything. And then brought me back to their shooting range and, you know, started at 10 yards and taught me how to shoot. And then they had me at 20 yards, you know, and I was probably there for like 4 hours total, I would say. And I've been back in there. A couple times.
So they went through it all with you.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Cool.
I really can't say anything bad about them.
Okay. All right. So now have you been shooting consistently since you've gotten your bow?
Yeah,
every
single day that I've been not traveling, I've been shooting without fail. So,
all right. So, well, that's awesome. So I'm guessing that since then your accuracy is getting a little bit better and you're doing what people your age do, and that's go to the internet for help with whatever it is you're struggling with, you know, if you're off target or how to adjust your sights and rests and whatnot. Have you started having the conversation with yourself about, okay, I got this bow and I want to be a bow hunter, but now where do I go? Especially in Texas, where do I go to hunt?
Yeah, that's the biggest. So that's like the hurdle that I'm trying to figure out now. Yeah. The tag process seems incredibly overwhelming.
It's
been so cool to watch my accuracy grow. You know, I started shooting at just 20 yards and now I'm shooting pretty consistently from like 50 and 60, which feels so cool. The two things I'm kind of thinking about now is shooting, you know, I need to get a range finder because I've been shooting, you know, I have every 10 yards marked out like nice. And so it's obviously easy when you know exactly the range. But I need to start, you know, I need to start working on, you know, 67 yards or 41 yards, you know, things like that. So I need to get a rangefinder and start working on various distances, various angles. You know, I've been shooting on, you know, straight zero elevation path right now. So I just need to start switching it up. I'm looking to get a 3D target, like a deer or something like that. So that's going to be like the next purchase I think I'm going to make. And then the tag process seems just bananas. In Texas, everything's private. So I don't even know how I'm going to hunt in Texas at all anyway. You know, being new here, I don't know somebody who has 15,000 acres who will let me, who will let me go shoot deer on their land. The goal is to put in for some tags for the fall and see what happens. I've been looking at some elk tags in Idaho. They have really cheap tags for veterans. It's like $30 for like a bull elk in Idaho for a veteran. Mm-hmm. And then like Colorado and New Mexico and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, the good news is you don't need 15,000 acres to kill a whitetail, even in Texas, right? I know so many people, you might even just by being on this podcast and me posting it and people listening to this right now, you may have guys reach out to you via, Instagram and be like, all right, you live in Texas, you know, we got this lease opportunity or we have this hunt club opportunity. We're down a couple guys and we want to bring somebody else in, which would be cool. Is there a specific species you want to bow hunt more than the other? Sounds like elk's high on that list.
Yeah. So, I think like many other guys, my bucket list is a big bull elk. That's sick. You know, a big bull elk would be so cool. That's my goal, but I don't plan to just, I don't plan on that being the first animal I shoot. So right now I'm thinking like in obviously Texas, so it would be cool to get a wild, like a feral hog, and then a whitetail, maybe an axis. So those are kind of like the three that are, this seem like the most attainable. If anybody needs pest control, I'll come in Texas, wherever you are, I will come shoot rifle or bow at your hogs. So it'd be cool. I think
there you go.
To shoot a hog, in terms of just, getting my first kill under my belt and then also breaking down an animal. I can't imagine it's very different from breaking down a fish, just a little bigger, but hog, whitetail, and then axis, seem like the most attainable just being in Texas. And then my, fall of 2026 plan is to put in for, an elk tag.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot that has to happen from where you're at now to drawing back on your first, like just listening to you talk, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that have to happen. Because as you, I don't know if maybe you know this, maybe you don't, it's getting harder for hunters to find access, especially private land permission access anywhere in the country. Right. A lot of people then gravitate to buying leases or buying their own property or the big one is public land. Right. Yep. Finding public land to hunt. And even Texas, I mean, your neighbor to the north, Oklahoma. How far are you from the Oklahoma border?
Probably like 6 hours. Nothing crazy.
Okay. All right. That would probably be your closest bet to decent deer hunting, outside of Texas, I would say. Cause obviously everybody wants to hunt as close to home as possible, but right to the north in Oklahoma, would be they have decent public land throughout that entire state and you can go in there and locate a whitetail and shoot it.
That's a good tip. I didn't even think of Oklahoma. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to get a tag.
Yeah, for sure. And it's over the counter still.
Oh, really?
So, okay. You can go. Yeah. I'm almost positive you can show up maybe you have to apply for it, but it's an automatic draw. And I think you get 2 buck tags.
Oh, okay.
Think about Oklahoma. Idaho, I've been to Idaho elk hunting before. That was an eye opener, especially for someone coming from farm ground Iowa, it's flat. I'm 800 feet above sea level or 1,000 feet above sea level. And then I get to Idaho and I literally cannot breathe. At 9,000 feet. I'm just like, holy shit, I'm too fat.
Right.
So, well, that's cool, man. First off, welcome. Welcome. I hope you get the job done year number one.
Yeah, it is the plan,
fun. And we'll see. Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about this. What's it called? Progressive something. What is this you're doing?
That's just the name of my personal training company. It's called Progression Mindset. And like I was saying earlier, okay. it's personal training. It's really focused towards men. I think that this country is, you know, really in need of strong men, more than ever. You know, my background is military and, you know, physical fitness and working towards self-reliance. And I think that America needs a lot more of that nowadays. And so my company is a personal training company. Yeah. So yes, fitness, but it's sort of the comprehensive, helping men develop the comprehensive package and just, you know, the confidence, like, hey, like there's people have so many excuses. There is a way to do all of this, right? Like just because you live in the city doesn't mean you can't learn how to hunt. Just because everyone always has a reason to not be able to do something. So I'm just trying to show, you know, it's possible to be a, you know, self-reliant strong man in America in 2026, even if, you know, the media doesn't want you to think it's possible. So.
Okay. What about, is this all online or do you have train people closer to where you live? Okay.
Talk to me about
what you do.
Yeah. So I used to do stuff in person when I was in the military, but I just travel so much that it got impossible. So I switched to doing everything online. And so it's just custom personal training. So I work pretty much, you know, every day, like usually via phone call and text. Like I have my clients' phone numbers. We text, you know, there's no, you know, the standard right now in the personal training industry is, you know, I have a weekly check-in with you. You know, I give you your workouts. I have a weekly mm-hmm. check-in. You tell me how you're doing. And a lot of times now, like it's all through like an AI chat or like an AI bot. So like, it's not even the trainer. So I think that, you know, they're really taking the human aspect out of personal training. It's not custom, you know, you're paying for customized programming, but it's really, you know, sorry, I'm giving away industry secrets here, but you know, a lot of personal trainers will have an easy program, an intermediate program and an advanced program. And, you know, they'll send you they'll send you out the test. You know, you tell them like where your fitness levels are and they're like, all right, like here's your custom plan that I built for you. And it's just their one of three templates that they'll send to you. Mine's not like that. I build every single month of personal training to completely fit you, injuries, your goals, everything. And it's a constant conversation. You know, do we need to tweak this? How was the workout yesterday? Like what went well, what didn't go well, anything need to change? Like every single week, you know, we're making tweaks. Every single month is a new, you know, a new set of workouts that's going out to you. It's all progressing off of the previous month. You know, it all has your goals and your limitations in mind. And it's all, you know, face to face, you know, who's making your programs and you know who you're talking to. So.
Gotcha. Quick question. You mentioned something about America needing strong men. Elaborate on what you mean by that. Are they missing, in your opinion? Are they deteriorating?
I think that there's a concerted effort. You know, and I don't want to get too extreme, but I'll get pretty extreme. So I think that there's a concerted effort right now in America and the world as a whole to diminish men and what it means to be a man, you know, a good man and a father. You know, the rise of extreme feminism. I mean, you know, all these things that are going on right now in the media that are telling, you know, men, you don't have to be masculine. You don't have to be, you know, what it means to be a good man. You don't have to be a good father. You know, single women, single mothers can do it. Like all of that. I think all of that is very harmful, especially to American values, especially, you know, I'm talking, you know, worldwide, yes, but especially to America. And I think we're seeing the results of that right now. You're seeing the results of what a lack of good men results in with for example, the Epstein files release. You know, you look at all these men that maybe knew about the situation and didn't do anything about it. And in my opinion, if you knew about the situation and you're not doing something about it or saying something, you are as guilty as those who are committing the crime. So, 100%. You know, it's just not having the, you are not man enough to stand up for people that aren't able to stand up for themselves is really what it is. It comes down to self-interest and selfishness. I think we're seeing a lot of that today in America. And I can see there's a growing movement of young men who are turning towards, you know, these values of self-reliance and physical fitness. And, you know, people aren't, you know, people my age aren't drinking as much and they're turning towards Christianity. You know, there's this growing movement of men who want, who are, you know, yearning for this and are being told that it's not right. And I think that it's important for people like me, you know, people like you to spread the word that, no, like this is right.
Yeah. Yeah. I could not agree more with what it is you're saying, because dude, I have seen it firsthand in the world. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, dude, I would be embarrassed to be or act like you act. Or certain things like, I heard a quote one time, and I think it was actually from Dana White, the president, you know, president of the UFC or whatever.
I love the UFC.
And so basically from him basically saying, if your kids put in just a little bit, or like if they're focused and they can put in effort in this world, they're going to absolutely crush it, because the world is growing. Long story short, he says the world is growing pussies. Right. I mean, it's just weak individuals who don't know how to deal with any type of pressure. And instead of learning from the pressure and trying to become better, and so the next time pressure comes, they're giving up and they're blaming that shit on somebody else. And that's prime opportunity for someone who wants to put in effort to be very successful. So
100%.
That's how I'm raising my kids. Yeah, dude.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. That's what it should be.
Yeah. And then I also am a product of 90s rap music. And so I just come back to don't be a bitch, dude. Yeah. Like, that's all I can think about when I hear you talk. And so I love it, dude. So
Yep.
Well, my friend, dude, anything else that we need to talk about before we shut her down today?
I would just say, if you have any advice in terms of, you know, actually applying for tags, that would be great. So like, for example, when I was looking at tags for Idaho, for example, like, you have to know, and this goes back to the barrier to entry being so high. It's like, you have to purchase a tag in a specific unit or like a specific location in the state of Idaho. And there's, you know, 200 and whatever units. It's like, how do I know? And then you got to pick like bull or like antlered and non-antlered. It's like, how do you know? How do I know, as someone from Texas who's never been hunting my life, how do I know where to apply for a tag for, like, literally down to the specific unit?
Yeah, dude, it's not easy for someone who's never done it before.
Yep.
The good news is that if you like podcasting, or you consume any type of that content, there's podcasts out there. I host another podcast called the Western Rookie Podcast, and we've talked about that on that podcast before. You can go to companies like Go Hunt or Hunt and Fool, and they break down units and how many preference points you need, because there's some where you might be able to get in on year number one on a zero draw, a zero preference point unit. There's some over the counter tags left still available, but the West is for elk hunting, especially the West is going to, preference points, or lottery draws. So a lottery is it doesn't matter. Everybody has the same chance. They dump hundreds of thousands of names in a hat, essentially, and they pull out X number of them for every unit. You apply for what unit you want to go to, and then basically you have to research what unit you want to go to, right? And how hard is it? The more people that apply for a unit in a lottery state, the less likelihood you have of hunting from a percentage standpoint of hunting that unit. Now, if you collect, so for example, I hunt in Wyoming, or I've been collecting preference points in Wyoming. This is going to make you shit your pants for 10 years now. And okay. So I don't plan on hunting Wyoming every year, but when I do, it's going to be a good unit. It's going to have good access. Hopefully there's a good quality herd there with some decent antler size bulls that I can chase. And, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be more of that. It's something that I've been collecting over the years so that when I do make the decision to go, I can go. But here's the thing that from a Western standpoint that a lot of people overlook is, I think for bow hunting, the average success rate for a bow hunter across the West for elk is like 5 to 7%. So that's pretty low. Basically, that's saying every 10 years, I'm gonna kill one bull with my bow, especially for non-residents. What I would do if I was you is I would start off with cows, and I would, and the end result's the same, right? You're going to get the meat.
Right.
Go do a couple cow hunts because those tags are easier to get than a bull tag in whatever state. So that's just a very quick. Now, you could sit here, we could talk about that for the next 3 hours of all of the intricacies of first, you know, like first choice, second choice, third choice of units if you don't get your initial unit. But it is very complex, and it is something that before you do, you need to research properly and make sure that you know where you're hunting, what unit, does it have public land or not? Are you planning on paying an outfitter? Are you planning on paying a guide, trespassing fees? All of this shit changes. When I go out west from, I've had to learn it over, especially when I go mule deer hunting in South Dakota. I can get the tag pretty easily, but navigating the roads where you can and can't go, is corner crossing allowed? Can I get to landlocked public? All of that stuff matters. And it can definitely seem overwhelming for someone who's never done it before.
That's a good way to put it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But the good news is that there's research out there for you.
That's good to hear, because yeah, it's just a lot to handle.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Shane O'Connor, man, your favorite time of year is coming up with St. Patrick's Day. So have a good rest of your day, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me, man. Thank you.
It was great, Dan. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you having me. My first podcast. It was awesome.
There you go.
All right, Dan. Thanks a lot.
All right.